The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Thomas Robson Carnew. Thomas is a former professional footballer who began his career at Arsenal as a schoolboy aged 10 before moving to Reading and eventually West Brom. He was selected to represent Wales at UEFA's Euros in 2016, where Wales made the semi-finals thanks in large part to Thomas scoring against Belgium. Thomas is also the founder of the Turmeric Company and he joins us now. Thomas, thank you for coming on Table Talk.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll start, Thomas, where we always do, at the very beginning and ask you, what are your earliest memories of food?
Good question. My earliest memories of food would probably be around my grandmother's on Saturday evenings and her cooking, you know, a nice shepherd's pie, a nice meringue for dessert. So yeah, probably home comforts is probably what I would say is first memories of food.
And what were mealtimes like?
Yeah, mealtimes were really good. I think, again, you know, sort of in a fast-paced world that we live today, a lot of families don't sort of sit together. But growing up, that was certainly something that was important within our family. You know, we'd sort of sit around the table at every meal. And I think, yeah, it was an important part of the day, an opportunity to catch up on sort of wins and losses over the course of the day, whether at school or education or sort of early years and teens. So, yeah, a really nice experience.
And the cooking as a child, did you learn anything from your grandmother or was it more a sort of arriving at the dinner table thing?
Yeah, there was definitely an interest there, probably more in the sweeter side of things in terms of cooking. There was always a beautiful coffee cake that I'd have, which was absolutely delicious, which my grandma would make and then my mum would make. She would always make pancakes as well on special occasions, but it's more like this, she called them pikelets, like tiny little pancakes. So understanding the recipes and participating in that was something I'm really grateful for looking back as a memory because, you know, it certainly is a memory and a positive one.
And Thomas, your family have got connections to both Wales and Nigeria. How did that influence the food that you were eating when you were growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I think my father would always cook some traditional African foods, things like okra soup, things like jollof rice and also plantains. So we'd have that real mixed blend. So my grandmother was Welsh and my mum, you know, she was born in England. So we had that real, you know, sort of diverse cultural upbringing, you know, translated into food as well, which was a really unique experience again. Something definitely that I would say really, really grateful for because, again, not a lot of people experience that growing up, you know, sort of, so certainly a privilege.
And tell us about school food. Were you a fan of school food?
There's a big influence that school food has on kids. I personally didn't like it at all. I'd always request a packed lunch to be taken in. I remember, you know, sort of just what would have been frozen chips or smiley faces and fish fingers, which weren't necessarily always warm. But yeah, I think I'm sure food at schools has progressed since then, but there wasn't a lot of healthy options when I was growing up. And I think that's quite important because the meals during the day are so important for children. And I think, yeah, there's probably quite a high lack of nutrition in those meals. And I certainly experienced that in my childhood.
And Thomas, you began your career at Arsenal at the age of 10, and then you moved to play for Reading at the age of 15. Take us through what the kind of food is like when you're training at one of these professional clubs. Are there people who take a kind of keen interest in your diet? What sort of food are you eating? Because listeners won't have heard that before.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, having a meal plan as a 15-year-old is quite a strange concept, but that's certainly what we kind of had. We'd be advised by the club, you know, academy nutritionist to eat specific foods, you know, foods which are high in protein, high in carbohydrates. I think there's definitely been some advancements in terms of the nutritional understanding since then. You know, we're sort of talking nearly 20 years ago. So there wasn't a lot of diversity in sort of food. It was very one-dimensional, proteins and carbohydrates, where I think now it's clear that you need a range of micronutrients, macronutrients, you know, key compounds to support various different functions in your body, whether that be through immunity or inflammation reduction, so on and so forth. So as a teenager, there was a lot of information around what we should and what we shouldn't eat. But looking back, it is super interesting because, you know, you could argue that actually because of what we were told to eat, which was, you know, high protein, high carbs, we were probably to a degree nutrient deficient in some areas. So, yeah, I think the positive is there's lots of advancements from that point in time. And you can take what we do now as an example. You know, we work with a lot of nutritionists within sports and outside of sports, whereas 20 years ago, that would never have happened with our range.
And as a youth player, you were beset by injuries, which was a major impediment to your career, but also forms quite an important part of your business and nutrition story afterwards. Tell us a bit about the injuries at the time. What happened?
Yeah, it was quite a traumatic period. As a 15-year-old, to go through two major surgeries, reconstructive knee surgeries, essentially. And unfortunately, it happened because of a bad tackle. My knee basically was snapped in half to a degree. Like, my left knee went beyond my right knee through a challenge. It was a knee-high challenge. And at that point in time, you know, my knee was, obviously the ligaments in my knee were ruptured. Went and had to see a specialist, MRI, and subsequently needed major surgery to reconstruct the ligament. And yeah, that was a really difficult time because up until that point, I didn't really understand the concept of injury. You know, when you're young and you're playing, you don't have to appreciate health for the most part because you are healthy, you know, you're nimble, you're flexible, you can recover quickly. So it was the first sort of realization that your health is really, you know, your most valuable asset. And I realized that quite quickly. And I had to go through essentially 2.5 years of really tough rehabilitation where the physios and the doctors and the surgeons were quite adamant that I wouldn't be able to play without pain or restriction again because of the trauma that my knee had gone through, and were encouraging me to look at different career paths outside of football, because ultimately coming back from such a major surgery and injuries was very, very unlikely at that top level of elite football. So persevered, which is very much the moral of my story. I was able to really sort of go through some really low lows and have that belief and vision and faith that I could ultimately overcome those injuries. And eventually, through nutrition, I was ultimately able to do so.
And tell us how the turmeric helped. I mean, why was it that that was the ingredient that came to your rescue so much?
Yeah, so it was around, you know, 2.5 years where post-surgery and I was beginning to play and train again. But every morning it would take me 15 minutes to get the full range and flexion in my knee because of the swelling and inflammation. Every time I'd go for a jog, you know, I'd get chronic pain in my knee and my knee would swell like a balloon. And so the physios and doctors, which is still a relatively typical route, prescribed me painkillers and anti-inflammatories, and unfortunately my body had a complete adverse reaction to them. So I started passing blood in my urine, having severe nausea following taking these drugs ultimately, which would take the edge off the pain but certainly wouldn't deal with the root cause. So got to a place where I was really between a rock and a hard place, in as much as I couldn't recover from the pain and the surgeries I had had, but the pain relief which I'd been prescribed, you know, wasn't working. My father and I basically turned to natural nutrition and went on a research binge, went to the public library, scoured the internet. You know, the internet certainly wasn't what it is today. But we began finding resources from various different cultures and practices around the world, things, you know, such as ancient Asian culture, Ayurvedic medicine, where it was very much a natural approach to ailments, pain, inflammation. And we basically began to identify these key ingredients which could all anecdotally reduce pain and inflammation and swelling. And these ingredients were relatively accessible in whether it was the local markets or supermarkets. They were things such as pineapple, pomegranate, watermelon, ginger, and subsequently turmeric. But it was all about having it in their rawest format, as opposed to having it in a capsule or a powder or a tablet form. And so my father basically began sourcing all of these raw ingredients over a few weeks and began mixing them into what initially was a paste. I was quite fussy as a teenager, as most teenagers are. So I was like, I'm not going to be able to consume that paste every single day. So he reiterated and turned it into what was a golden elixir. And, you know, from that moment on, I was consuming that for, you know, a number of weeks, to the point where I began noticing a reduction in the pain and swelling I was having post-activity. But it was around 6 weeks after I began taking this blend, and my father would create batches every 4 or 5 days and leave them in my fridge, that I was, you know, usual routine is wake up, roll out of bed in the morning, head into the bathroom and into the shower. And I was in the shower at that moment in time. I realized that that was the first time in over 2.5 years I had woken up without any pain or restriction. And so from that moment on, I was able to play and train effectively pain-free, and went on a year later to make my first team debut, a year later make my international debut, and a year after that I made my Premier League debut. And I was able to do all of that pain-free. And yeah, I sort of used this blend as my secret weapon throughout my entire career, which was a really valuable asset.
And Thomas, am I right in thinking your grandfather was a herbalist? Was that, how did that kind of feed into it as well, that kind of knowledge?
Yeah, so again, he wasn't long ago that I found out, but, you know, my father's father was a herbalist in Nigeria. And my father has stories of him sort of going out into the forest, coming back with various different plants, grounding them and, you know, extracting them, and then treating people who'd come into their house and effectively curing them of the various ailments that they had. And, you know, my father recalls that, but my father's father, he died when my dad was only 10. So he died in the Biafran War in Nigeria, civil war. So that sort of memory was kind of lost, because then my father moved to the UK as a teenager to study law, and obviously went on to, you know, sort of meet my mum. So that history obviously came out through my father by him creating this blend, and the blend ultimately changed my life and the trajectory of my life. And over a decade later, we turned that into a product which, you know, was available to people in all different walks of life and is now helping, you know, tens of thousands of people daily.
How did that come about? Did that start post-football career? When did you sort of turn it into a business rather than just a personal medication for yourself?
Yeah, so it was 2016 when I was in a superstore in London, and I was in the food hall, and I saw a turmeric shot on the shelf. And up until this point, you know, my father had ruined dozens of blenders, you know, over a decade long. Every utensil in the kitchen was stained yellow. You know, he'd go to work with yellow fingertips because he was making this blend for me, you know, at least once a week. And so to see a turmeric shot on the shelf was amazing. You know, it was mind blowing. It was like, finally, you know, a decade after I had experienced the benefits of, you know, turmeric and its active compounds and functional ingredients, someone has released a turmeric shot. And so I bought a load off the shelf, took them back to my dad's, and we went to drink them together. But as soon as it touched our lips, we literally spat it out. We couldn't believe how inferior it tasted and felt to what we were making at home. And it was only at that point where we spun the bottle and actually looked at the ingredients and realized that turmeric was less than 1% of the overall ingredient list. There was apple juice, orange juice, and water, which were the main components in that product. And, yeah, we were like sort of mind blown because it was marketed as a turmeric shot, but actually it was just an apple juice shot masquerading as a sort of beneficial product. So we looked into the consumer packaged goods market, we looked into functional beverages, and then we did research on turmeric as a natural ingredient and realized that there was a lot of clinical research and studies ongoing around turmeric and its active benefits across various different ailments and supporting health for people all over the world. And so we kind of realized that then there weren't any true functional products on the market. There was lots of capsules and tablets and powders, but actually, you know, that's like consuming a powdered steak or a powdered, you know, sort of leaf or plant. You know, you're not getting the true nutrient makeup of it. So we then realized that there was a massive gap in the functional beverage market because every single product on shelf either contained apple juice, contained orange juice, or was very low in any functional ingredients. So we basically decided to bring this blend, this homemade recipe, to market. And we went on a 2-year journey. We spoke to the leading manufacturers of juice beverage in the UK and Europe. None of them would produce the product for us because we were using two high quality ingredients and the ingredients were too fresh for them, which sort of says a lot about what's on shelf. And yeah, we basically, in order to bring it to market, we had to become a manufacturer ourselves. So we ended up setting up our own manufacturing facility, you know, understanding how we needed to scale. And then we decided, you know, the route to bring this product to market. And we launched the Turmeric Co. as a direct consumer brand in 2018. And within 4 weeks of launching, we began receiving, you know, sort of life-changing customer testimonials, very similar to what I had experienced.
And Thomas, just taking you back slightly to your footballing career, how did you used to go about preparing both kind of physically and mentally and I guess nutritionally before a match? And particularly so if, you know, in a, for instance, like the Euro semi-finals, like big matches like that, how did you go about preparing for them?
Yeah, I think a massive amount of it is psychological. Like you have to really be mentally in a really good place. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of pressures and a lot of expectations when you're playing elite sport. So mental preparation is always the first key, followed closely by physical preparation. So your physical preparation is your sleep, your training, your recovery, but also your nutrition as well. And so the biggest thing that I found very early on, as I obviously recovered and was able to compete and became a professional footballer, competing against, you know, some of the best players in the world, was that you have to have a really strong routine. You need to get the right elements and areas of your performance nailed down, and then you need to be able to consistently repeat them. So, you know, what I mean by that is, if you're preparing for a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, you're going to have very different performances, regardless of anything to do with your skill level, simply down to your physical contribution. If you eat on one of the days at 1 o'clock before the game, another one of the days at 12 o'clock before the game, another one of the days at 2 o'clock before the game. So the biggest thing is consistency. But with consistency, as I said, you need to make sure you're doing the right things. So you're getting the right nutrients at the right time. You know, you're sleeping enough at the right times with the right conditions. And then the same again with training. You know, you need to make sure you're not overtraining, but at the same time, you need to make sure you're not undertraining. So, you know, that 90 minutes of what everyone sees on television is actually made up of 28 days of preparation just to get to that sort of physical point. So yeah, preparation is key.
Today, how strict are you in your diet and what you consume?
Yeah, so I finished playing professional football about 2 years ago now. So in terms of my output, my physical output has significantly reduced. So for me, in terms of nutrition, like I eat a lot cleaner than I did back then. And what I mean by that is typically when you have a really high load day, and that might be a training day during a week, or it might be a game on the weekend, calorie replenishment is really important. So those are the times when it's so important that you're eating as much as possible. And so going from that to not having to compete and play and train every day, you know, my nutritional intake has significantly dropped. I probably eat probably a quarter of the, you know, sort of calories that I would have usually consumed. But I feel obviously, you know, great and strong because it's enough, you know, and I'm eating at the right times. So I'd say the volume of food and the frequency of eating is probably the biggest change. But in terms of health and well-being, you know, like, you know, every day I start my day with a turmeric shot. You know, I have the necessary vitamins, you know, liposomal vitamin C, liposomal vitamin D, you know, really key nutrients and compounds that really do significantly change how you're feeling over a sustained period of time. And yeah, I think the biggest thing for me also is when it comes to nutrition and food is data and validation of it. And, you know, that was a massive area for us as a business and as a product range was, you know, we were having all of these incredible testimonials, but actually, how can we validate that? How can we build data around that? So we made, you know, quite an ambitious step towards clinical studies on our product range. And we were able to partner with Nottingham Trent University, who were able to run some, you know, really robust trials and track, you know, inflammation, blood markers, reduction in muscle soreness, reduction in whole body soreness post-activity. And the data that has come out of that validates what we have known anecdotally and what we read anecdotally sort of 50 plus years ago. So it is super fascinating.
Thomas, you have three children. What are meal times like for you now? Do you much cooking?
Yeah, so I do a really nice pasta and chicken dish, which the kids love. But yeah, I think their routines are pretty strict, should I say, you know, eating at the right times, trying to get them to eat the right amount. But I think with children, it's always, you know, you always have to remember when you were a kid. I think it's quite hard as we all get older, what it was like, yeah, to be a child, and they're not always going to eat perfect meals every single day, but yeah, at least putting the right food in front of them and the right time is really important. And again, when it comes to treats and snacks and sweets, it's all in moderation. And I think that's where, when you look at society as a whole now, and when you look at the health of society, you could argue that it's never been as bad as it has been today, which is quite strange given the sort of advancements in technology and science that we have. You know, there's never been higher levels of obesity, you know, chronic heart disease, all of these, you know, really important and significant ailments are really sort of spiking and through the roof. And I think winding that back, that is fundamentally, you know, due to lifestyle, but also due to the food and the food system of highly processed foods that we live in. So I think trying to navigate that with children is really important because I think, you know, one in four kids, I think, are leaving primary school obese now, which is, you know, a scary statistic. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it has to start at the top, you know. And for me, a great example is Coca-Cola and a McDonald's, you know, fantastic in terms of snacks and treats, you know, obviously highly processed, lots of sugar, but their influence, say, on kids football in the UK, you know, McDonald's are the main sponsor of kids football. You know, the biggest tournament and competition in the world is the Football World Cup, and Coca-Cola are the main sponsor. So it's like, yeah, I think we there needs to be more responsibility taken by, you know, big corporates and associations to really make sure and be conscious of the messaging that we're, whether it's, you know, subliminal or intentional, delivering to kids and to, you know, society as a whole.
Is turmeric something that you recommend for everyone, or is it just for those with inflammation problems? How do you see it?
It's a really interesting one from our perspective because our ideal customer, you know, so our core customer is actually 35 and 40 years of age plus, male and female. So it's different from the elite athlete perception or the, you know, sort of active, you know, younger lifestyle. It's genuinely people who are looking for a difference. And now when you look at ailments, you know, the majority of ailments that arise are due to inflammation of cells. So for us, you know, to live a healthy life, and ultimately, as I said before, you know, we're firm believers that your health is your wealth, and you only really truly know that when your health is taken away from you. Now, for us, if you can reduce inflammation, regardless of where you are in your own life, you know, whether you're young, whether you're active, whether you're, you know, an older, you know, person, if you can take steps towards reducing inflammation and allowing your body to function towards an optimum level, I think that's a really positive. So from our perspective, we firmly believe that the product range is for everyone. And I think when you also look at society again as a whole, people are beginning to take positive steps towards optimization and longevity. And we need to get away from, you know, sort of prescription and actually look at prevention. And I think that's a really powerful message, which can be done fundamentally through food.
And Thomas, what for you is comfort food?
Well, comfort food, I really like what would I say is my current comfort food? I do flitter in and out. I like a wide range of foods, so I'm not fussy, I'm not specific or particular. But I'd say comfort food is maybe a Chinese, maybe. But again, I'd probably get the Peking duck and have a duck wrap, and that's quite a treat.
I know we talked about reducing sugar intake, but do you have a sweet tooth?
When I was younger, I did have a sweet tooth, but now I do not at all. I'm very conscious of sort of sugar as a whole. Like it's really, it's a fascinating industry again. You know, when you look at the sugar industry and the sugar addiction that a lot of people have, and don't get me wrong, it's a very important food for us, but actually it's certainly overabused for a lot of people and a lot of the time unconsciously too. So yeah, as I said, when I was a kid, I used to love sweets. However, now I prefer something savoury as opposed to sweet.
And Thomas, we always finish this podcast by asking our guests what their desert island meal would be. What would be yours? And it's more a meal that you kind of sort of cross between desert island and death row meal, but we think that sounds a bit morbid. So what would be your ideal meal?
I'd probably say a Sunday roast. I think you can't go wrong with a Sunday roast. There's loads of different variations to it as well, but there's the key components, which if cooked well, are very homely. So yeah, I'd probably say that.
What are your non-negotiables for a Sunday roast? What do you have to have in there?
Yes, good question. Obviously a roast you need, for me, I need meat in there. You know, and I'm open to various different meats, you know, like chicken, you know, roast beef. I'm open to either of those. Obviously Yorkshire puddings are a massive treat, particularly cooked well. Roast potatoes with all of the trimmings. But I'd say, yeah, the biggest one is definitely a nice, good quality gravy.
I'm with you there. If you're interested in turmeric shots, then you can visit theturmeric.co to find Thomas's anti-inflammatory turmeric shots there. Thomas, thank you for joining Table Talk.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys.